Originally from Auckland, Ian Hickling is calling home this morning from the famed resort island of Barbados, off the northeast coast of South America, in the Caribbean Sea, about 1,000 kilometres from the coast of Venezuela. Barbados is the size of Greater Wellington if you add in the Hutt Valley and Porirua. Barbados is an independent British Commonwealth nation. Bridgetown, the capital, sees lots of cruise ships. I spoke to Ian yesterday and, of course, had to start by asking him about the weather.
It's a bright and sunny day as it is most days here in Barbados. I came here for a month in 1996. I was asked to come and help a new medical device factory get ISO 9000 accreditation, and on the first day that I arrived here, we were out early walking along the beach, and the owner of the company, who's from Florida, said to me, would you consider staying a little bit longer? And that 1 month, we agreed to stay on for 3 months, and 27 years later, we're still here. Haven't managed to escape yet.
So you're Barbadians now. Actually, there's another word for that, right?
That's right, Bajans, yeah. Yeah, they shorten it to Bajans. If they're being particularly prim and proper, which they have a habit of doing sometimes, then, yeah, they're called Barbadians, but mostly they're just Bajans.
So are you considered Bajan after 27 years?
Oh, no, this is one of those places that you're only Bajan if you were born here. It's a small island. It's 161 square miles. It's shaped like a pear. It's about 19 miles north to south and about 16 miles east to west at the widest point. And we're about 13 degrees above the equator, so it's pretty hot and 31 degrees outside at the moment. And we get a good prevailing wind most of the year, so that keeps it a little bit cooler.
And there's a Creole dialect spoken in Barbados.
Somewhat. Our greatest export here is Rihanna and rum, and she tries to speak politely most of the time, but you'll find Bajans, because it's quite a tourist economy, they will talk properly to tourists, but if they lapse into dialect between each other, they talk about three times the speed. They usually drop the last letter in each word, and it can be a hell of a lot of fun listening to them. The strangest thing is it's a very difficult accent to copy as well. You get a lot of people who come here and go, yeah, man, but, well, that's Jamaican, and that's sort of 3 hours flying away. So the accents you're most likely to hear sort of internationally would be Jamaican and Trinidadian, but Bajan's quite a different accent.
If you're speaking Bajan, how do you say good morning? Can you speak some Bajan to us?
No, because I usually make people laugh when I do. But the first time we were out walking on the street, early in the morning we just went for a walk, and we found everyone would walk past you and say good morning. And it still has that sort of slightly old-fashioned English sensibility about it, where people are incredibly polite. So if, for example, you walk into a doctor's office, you open the door and walk in, and you have to address everybody. You'll say good afternoon, and everybody will say good afternoon back to you. It's quite polite in that manner. Can I speak Bajan? Not really. It's very difficult.
You grew up in Auckland, Ian.
I did. I'm a Westie from West Auckland. I went to school in Ponsonby, a place called St. Paul's College, which was a really Polynesian melting pot in those days. We had a great time there, and went to Auckland Uni. Had my first job was in Palmerston North, actually, in a company called New Zealand Pharmaceuticals. Worked there for a couple of years, then went back to Auckland to a place called Douglas Pharmaceuticals. It's the biggest generic pharmaceutical company in New Zealand, and company I think New Zealand should be pretty proud of. They seem to have grown and grown and grown. And I set up the R&D department there, a research department, and we produced lots of tablets, capsules, inhalers, sunscreens, all sorts of things. So had lots of fun just playing in a lab, and then got caught up in, moved from pharmaceuticals to veterinary pharmaceuticals at New Farm, which was in Otahuhu. And then I got called up by an old boss and asked if I would go and volunteer with the Fred Hollows Foundation. And I ended up flying there every weekend for 6 months to Sydney and training some people from Eritrea in what's called good manufacturing practice. And at the end of that, they said, these Eritrean people said to me, well, you need to come and help us set up the factory in Eritrea. And I said, no, I'm fine. And they said, we'll get you an Eritrean wife. And I said, that's the last thing I want. But it all ended up, I've got an Eritrean wife. And we've been married 27 years this December.
So you went to Eritrea and you met Ida, and shortly afterwards you both went to Barbados? Is that how it went?
Well, no, I had to set up the factory in Eritrea, which that was in, what was that, 93 to about 95. And then the second factory was in Kathmandu in Nepal. So I was for probably close to 3 years commuting between Auckland and Eritrea and Nepal. And once the Nepalese factory was over, we were supposed to do a third factory in Vietnam, but the Fred Hollows Foundation decided they weren't going to do that. So I had to find a job at the beginning of an Auckland winter. And this company that had provided the technology for the Fred Hollows factory asked if I would come and help them out. So I said, sure, if it means I don't have to go back to an Auckland winter. And I thought I'd be back by, you know, November that year, but never got back. I had a call from the head of this company saying, Ian, you want to come and help me set up this factory? It's in Barbados. And I had never really heard of the place apart from that old song about, oh, I'm going to Barbados. So I had to go to the local library in Eritrea and find an atlas, but I had to look up where it was. I knew it was in the Caribbean, but not really sure where that was. And there's about six countries in the Caribbean that start with a B, so I wasn't entirely sure which one it was. So there's Bahamas and Bermuda and Belize and Barbuda and Barbados. So anyway, we are about 3.5 hours flight south-southeast of Miami, and we're about an hour's flight north of South America. And we are a little bit further out in the Atlantic, if you imagine that big island chain that starts sort of Haiti, Dominican Republic, through Jamaica, and then down through all the volcanoes down to Grenada. We're not in that chain. We're about 100 miles east of that. So we're mostly out of the hurricane belt because the water's too cold here. It's about 25 Celsius all year round. And so that water temperature is a bit too cold to really get hurricanes started up. So it's a fairly small country. It's about 300,000 people. And so since we've been here, I've really tried to get involved in absolutely everything. One thing Fred Hollows always talked about was no survey without service. So I've always believed that if I'm here, I'll do whatever I can. So for about 6 years, I was on the board of the Sailing Association here, the local cruising sailing club. I was on the board there. And I've tried to help out the QEH, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and just to try and, what do they call it, capacity building here. Yeah, we donate quite a few lenses to the QEH. It's not a rich country, although we don't get a lot of foreign aid because we're viewed as a second world country here. And so what the tourists see is the, you know, multi-million dollar houses and big tourist resorts on the west and south coasts. But there's still a large amount of poverty here. And that was one of the difficult things about coming here from New Zealand. When I was growing up, New Zealand was a really egalitarian place where you didn't really have ultra-rich people, or certainly I never saw them, and but you didn't really see much poverty either. Whereas here, you see poverty each day. Now, it's not the level of poverty that I've seen in, for example, India, but it's still tough to see.
LensTech has grown into a big company, one of the largest of its kind in the world.
Yes. So we were originally in the business of what's called technology transfer. So the major shareholder of the company, he's a mechanical engineer and had designed a lot of the equipment that is used to make these what are called intraocular lenses. They go in your eye when you have a cataract taken out. And what we did was we came in and said, rather than just supplying the technology, let's build ourselves a factory. So we did that. And we've put all our money back in. So we haven't made a profit for many years. We just put every single dollar back into research and development. So we've become one of the most high-tech companies in this market. It sounds fairly niche, lenses that go inside your eye after cataract operations, but there's probably 20 million of these operations done every year. In fact, last year we got a US FDA approval for our top-of-the-line multifocal lens. So in this factory, I have 260 people, and there are only two foreigners, myself and a French guy, and all of the research is done here. So So we've just shown what the second or third world's capable of doing. So they've got a very good education system here. My kids have gone through it. Primary education's fantastic. Secondary is pretty good. Tertiary, they have a local university, but not a lot of resources for science-based people, certainly. But it's not a bad place to live. I would say it's the second best place in the world after New Zealand.
Where do people go if not the local university?
For tertiary education, well, we always say that Barbados breeds a lot of lawyers and accountants and doctors, and that is true because they have the resources needed. But if you are wanting to become a scientist or an engineer or someone like that, you really need to have a much more practical bent to what you do. So you need expensive labs. So if you're able to win a scholarship or if your parents can afford it, you would tend to go, I would say, to Canada or to the US or to the UK. My daughter, she went to Boston. This tells you how good it is. She was accepted at MIT in Boston, and she's about to graduate next week. And they have just told her that they want her to do a master's and that they will pay for it. So that's all on the back of a Barbadian primary and secondary education. So, you know, people take their education seriously here.
That must make you a very proud dad.
Yes, very much. I tell everybody about it.
Now, let's come back to the lenses. Where do they go to in the world, the lenses that you manufacture?
So last year we manufactured around 550,000 of them. 325,000 of those went to China. We are probably top three of the lens brands in China, and people would rather buy ours because they know the quality is the best. Probably sold 50,000 in the US, and the rest of it across the world. We sell in Bangladesh, quite a few different countries in Asia. We have an operation in the UK and in Europe. We sell quite a few in the Middle East as well, even Iran.
Before your operation, were lenses being made in Barbados, or did you start this whole focus?
Yeah, there was no medical device manufacturing here at all. There was one very small pharmaceutical company. But really, this hasn't been a manufacturing base for many years. And so the government loves us because we provide really high-quality employment for a lot of people.
Has other medical device manufacturing followed suit?
Not yet, but we're talking with a Chinese company now that would like us to start assembling some of their equipment here to then export into the US. It's a reasonably high cost base here. But if you're making really high-value products, this is a great place because we have very high literacy rate, close to 100%. People are knowledgeable. It's English law, English language, and pretty low corruption as well, which you don't always get in this part of the world. But it's a pretty transparent place to work.
How would you describe or attribute the success of your business?
I think is by having a pretty clear idea of what we wanted to do. By having a business case that fits what we do here. And we often say that the reasons we came here are not really the reasons we stayed. You know, we came because we needed to get it out of the US, because if we were just exporting from the US, the FDA gets involved. We now export to the US, so that's no longer a pertinent thing. From my office, I look out directly on the runway at the airport here, and we have better transport links here to the rest of the world than you do from most cities in the US, for example. So if our parent company, which has about 30 people in Florida, for them to get something to Europe would probably take 3 days. For us, it's usually overnight. So there's a British Airways flight just landed right in front of me there. That's another reason. I think the people as well. People here have, as they often talk about India and Australia, that they took the British bureaucracy and perfected it. I think Barbadians have also done that. They love their paperwork, which fits really nicely with the medical device facility. So the whole business case just works.
What are the advantages of your children growing up in Barbados? And what are the disadvantages? You've touched on education, and that sounds extraordinary.
Yeah, I think we chose it was a private primary school. But we walked in there and we loved it because it was covered in trees. It was really diverse. We walked in, there were black kids, there were white kids, there were all sorts of races of kids there. You could tell there were some that were rich, some that were poor, and they really emphasized respect for each other. And I think what that gave them was a certain confidence. So you'll find most Beijing kids have got confidence, but it's they're also, there's a Beijing word called brought up, which means you're sort of well brought up. And you'll find a lot of them are like that here. There's a certain respect for elders and things. I think it is the kind of place that's small enough that, for the most part, kids are safe to do whatever they want. They can go to the beach. They're outside all the time, like we used to be as kids in New Zealand. I go cycling 3 times a week, but usually do that at 4 in the morning because it's so hot. One of the bad things, not really that much. I think they have that kind of confidence that they can go anywhere in the world and fit in anywhere in the world. I think that's one of the things of having a tourist industry is that you get exposure to people from all over the place.
How much do your children know about New Zealand? Have you brought them here?
Oh, yeah. Each of them went to New Zealand within their first year of life, and they've been back several times. My daughter's going there in 2 weeks' time, and she's going to visit her grandparents and my sister and her family, and then is going down to Christchurch to, whether it's an internship or what, but she's going to spend a week or two with a good friend of mine down in Christchurch and also environmental consultancy down there. And I believe there's a conference on women in engineering that she's going to attend as well. We try to keep them as close to New Zealand as possible because I'd love to go back one day and hoping that they would, although I think she'll probably end up in the States and he'll probably end up in Canada. We'll at least be able to bring one home.
Let's talk about Barbados. What's it like day to day? What's social life like? What's community life like?
So it is a tourist economy, largely, and so most of the people that you bump into will be there for a week or two, and they have their tourist mentality on, whereas I work, a standard day job doesn't really change much where you are in the world, I wouldn't think. But because the economy is focused on tourism, there are so many restaurants and social events to do all the time. And so the problem is not that there's nothing to do, the problem is there's too much to do here. And just getting a rest is important. If you contrast major carnival around here is in Trinidad, which is the next island down from us. Trinidad has always had been a melting pot society. So they have lots of Indians, lots of African Negro descendants, you've got some Portuguese, etc. Barbados was really only white settlers from Britain, black slaves from Africa, and at a later period they had a few Irish people come in as indentured servants. That divide still remains. There would be probably 80% of the population is black. The government is black, and there's about 10% of what we call the white Bajans, and probably 10% of foreigners, tourists, etc., who've come into the country. You don't find any real mixing, certainly not a lot of marriage between the black and white populations. There's no real, I don't think there's a real racial tension anymore. It's just not a big mixing of that. And so, for example, in 27 years, we have probably not ever been invited to a Bajan's house. We've been invited to many other people's houses, and we have lots of friends around. Most of those friends tend to be expats who've come in. And one of the problems is, it being a small country, it is nevertheless a country, and so it has every government department that New Zealand probably has, and it has the budget to match that. And so we have a lot of embassies here, and we tend to meet the ambassadorial people. The trouble is they rotate in and rotate out of countries, so you'll develop a friendship and you know that within 4 years they'll be washed out of the country. So socially it's very busy, but a little bit transient.
And just coming back to this point that you make, what do you attribute not going to a Bajan's house on?
I did mention that we'll never be a Bajan because we weren't born here, although my wife's just got a Bajan passport now, which was really nice. I don't really know the answer to the question, except that Bajans have for at least 70 or 80 years been welcoming tourists here. So there is a certain relationship between the host and the tourist, and I think that doesn't extend to people's houses. Very much their home is their castle. But also people tend to a large extent, they would tend to socialise outside of the home. Whereas in New Zealand, well, certainly when I was living there, it was more about you might have people over for dinner or something. Here you would arrange to meet up with someone at a rum shop or something.
How big is rum in terms of Bajan identity?
I think it's probably overstated. They do have they got lots of old wisdom here and stuff, but they say women in the pews and men across the road in the rum shop. So that's a typical thing. Somebody told me 280 different religious denominations here. So there's churches everywhere. And you'll find pretty close to every church is a rum shop. So the main thing is to socialise. Go out and have a drink and socialise. So you'll find the old men gathered under a tree playing dominoes and firing a rum or having a Banks, which is the beer. But Bajans, to a large extent, because it's a tourist economy, they live and let live. So we do have some stars who live here. Cliff Richard lives here, a few others. I remember many years ago, Pavarotti used to love coming here because he could do anything and no one would ever bother him. So Rihanna, because she's homegrown, I think people are much more proud of her. And whenever she's in the island, they talk about her more. I've never met her, but I've met the Prime Minister a few times. So this lady's name is Mia Mottley, and she's an absolutely formidable politician, really intelligent, and she seems to be doing great things for the country.
What is your home like? How would you describe it?
We are extremely lucky. We live in an old plantation house. It is called Highgate House. It was built in 1731. It has had lots of different uses. It used to be a nightclub. It used to be the aircraft control tower for the local airport. It's been a signal station, and it was also the residence for the EU ambassador for many years. And it overlooks Carlisle Bay, which is the main bay in the centre of the city. It's got 5 bedrooms. Old mahogany wood inside, and we have one of those dining rooms that looks like something out of the 16th century. It's huge, with Corinthian columns in it. But we don't own it, we rent. And our next door neighbour is Sir Garfield Sobers, who is, I think he's 83 now, and just the most lovely gentleman you could ever meet. It depends what country you come from, but a lot of people would say he's the best cricketer ever, apart from Bradman. But he was an all-rounder, fearsome bowler, a fantastic batsman in the 70s, I guess.
And is cricket still the national sport?
I would think it is titularly the national sport, although because the Windies haven't been doing so well for about 30 years, it's becoming less so. Football, i.e. soccer, is what most kids would play when they grow up. Of course, dominoes.
Dominoes, really?
Yeah, and it's quite a spectacle as well, because you get these teams. In fact, one of the ladies who works in the lab here, she's a national champion, and so she's offered to teach me. I always thought it was pure luck, but I understand it's not. But they make a big thing about slam. They call it slamming a dom, so they'll slam it down to try and intimidate the other team.
Now, you mentioned that Ida has her Bajan passport. Will you get yours too, or do you have it already?
No, I don't really want one. I've got a Kiwi passport. I love that. It's the heart of who I am. And I also have, because my parents were both from England, I have a British passport as well, and that does me enough.
You and Ida sound like you've found your happy place. Is it your forever place now, or might you come back to Aotearoa one day?
No, many years ago we were walking along, and we saw a place for sale, and we said, is this something we want to do? And this was 26 years ago. We said, no, we don't ever want to live here. In our hearts and our minds, this is not our home. New Zealand is going to be our home, so it is a matter of when we can move back there, when we can afford to. Our kids all being born here, this is their home, and that's one of the things when you're sort of a hybrid family that you end up having to deal with. You know, where is your home? And I think the home, I always say, my home is wherever my wife is, and so I'm pretty happy. But every time I go back, I'm initially a bit a bit nervous about arriving home, going, well, maybe I've grown away from the place or something. And within 5 minutes of getting there, it's just love at first sight again. I don't know if you've come in the airport in Auckland, obviously. There's that Maori carving across the entrance after you come off the plane. And we usually just stand there for a few minutes and just take it all in. I think you find a lot of Kiwis just hold New Zealand deep in their hearts and harbour the thought of going back one day.